Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The World Health Organization has officially declared burnout as a medical condition. SDPB's Gary Ellenbolt reported on it earlier this week, which got us thinking, what does burnout look like at work and how does it affect a business and personal bottom line? And most importantly, what can we do about it before burnout takes hold and does its damage? Who better to ask these questions than business leader and culture consultant Vani Harari? His company Think3D provides leadership training, business retreats, and in-office training. And he joins us now in the Kirby Family Studio and SDPB Studio in Sioux Falls. Do you love that when these conversations come up, we sit around in our office and we say, you better call Vani?
I do, actually. You know, I'm passionate about them. I'm passionate about helping people solve them. And, you know, it's interesting because when we talk about the different solutions, a lot of times for people, they seem radical or they seem, you know, oh, man, how are we going to do this? But really, they're the simplest things. And what we tell people most time, we do more untraining than we do training. Mm. The truth of it is we're intuitively connected to live and engage with each other. And some of these things that we're introducing in terms of the workforce are the things that are unnatural. And so it's a matter of how we manage that based on how we're actually designed as human beings versus what we want to accomplish as human beings.
So when people say burnout, what do they usually mean in your experience? What are they, when they say I'm burned out or my staff is burned out, what are they talking about?
You are physically, mentally, or emotionally, or a combination of those, just at the end of your rope. You're at the point where tomorrow, you can't really see it till you get there, right? And there's just a point where you want to be in your life where you want to not only be present in the moment, but you also want to be able to think about the things that you want to have happen, to think about what you want to have happen in your career or your family life or whatever. And usually when burnout happens, the way you know it happens is that you don't see anything else. It's just, can I get home? Can I get up? And that's usually when people are at burnout, because you're skipping your life, right? We're normally in two states now, which is working and escaping. There's not a lot of living. And so we're at work and then we escape from the realities of work.
And that seems like it must be a popular question. A lot of people, I think, that resonates with.
Right.
How come? What's going on? Why is it common?
Well, I mean, a couple things. Well, first of all, you know, you can make logic for always working, right? Because the thought process is there's always work to be done. You got time to lean, you got time to clean, you know, that type of thing. And so when you have a situation where you're coming from a post-industrial revolution, right, where people were essentially cogs in a wheel type of situation, where somebody needed a job, particularly post-depression, right, where you were actually lucky to have a job, well, the more likely you were to secure the job was based on your ability to do the job as long as possible, as much as possible, to get as much out of you, right? And so the general thought process is that. The other thing is that we view availability as an expense. So anytime you're not doing something or working, quote unquote, we see it as an expense. It's costing us money. Versus having you be here to engage in a culture, or having you be available to lead someone. Even when we think about management, we think about workers plus, meaning that you have a full workload and you're supposed to manage these people. Not like you're supposed to be available for these people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of it is just based on the point of saying, when do you not work? When do you ever get to go to your boss and say, I don't want to work right this moment?
Right.
That language is not, doesn't really exist. That conversation is never really had.
And for people who work in social media and, you know, networking kind of coincides with what they do, that becomes even more challenging for them. If I, you know, share something on Facebook, am I working? Am I not working? What does not work look like?
What does it look like? And this is a difficult thing, particularly in the Midwest, where we pride ourselves so much on our work ethic, right? That is what defines us, how much and how hard it is that we work. And we have a tendency, and I believe this is healthy, we make the work as important as the result. That can be healthy. Where it becomes unhealthy is where we make the work more valuable than the result. Because then it doesn't matter what we accomplish. We always have to be working. It is not about what it is that we're doing it for. It's just what we're doing. And that's where it gets dangerous. And so when you have a situation where somebody might make 5 posts a day, and we might say that person's not working, that person's lazy, that person might produce more than an entire marketing department if that person is an effective influencer, right? So the result was accomplished, right? But there could always be more result. So there could always be more work. And so there has to be a point where you have to regulate, you have to limit. And that just naturally works against, you know, people's desires in terms of business. We want to do as much as we can, as long as we can. Mm-hmm. And that just doesn't work for humans. That's not how we work. And so that's where we have to understand there's just a level of diminishing returns. That's where we have to realize is there's a point that we get where we start to operate in the deficit now, where we start to take away from the result. We can still work. You could work all day, but the result becomes diminished. And if you're not looking at that and you're only looking at the work, then there's never going to be a break. There's never going to be a reason to stop. And we have to bring that about.
If you or someone on your team is feeling burned out, is it too late?
No. If you are willing to put in some drastic change, if you're willing to do some triage, it's not too late. You have to rekindle that flame. It's like a relationship. You know, when you say the divorce word, you're at a certain place and you have to acknowledge that. Can you get back from that? Absolutely. But by virtue of the fact that you're having that conversation, it's going to take a whole heck of a lot of work, right? And like most things, they're easier to maintenance than they are to fix, right? And so it just makes more sense for you to spread it out and make sure that the workforce is, the workplace, excuse me, is feeding back to people. It's feeding you back so that way you can extend that length of time so you don't ever reach that critical mass or that point where that person has to make a decision.
I was reading in your book and it had something about going home from work feeling energized.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I know a whole lot of people who that's not their story.
Right.
They go home from work exhausted. They need a transition time. You know, they need to come home and collapse for a little bit. Maybe they'll get a little energy later on. What kind of culture feeds into going home from work energized, and not just energized to do more work at home because you love your job, but just energized for living?
Right. Well, you know, a lot of that has to do with environment. And one of the first things that we have to start doing when people are experiencing burnout is say it. Mm-hmm. Right. We have to be willing to say, I'm working too much, or this is too much work. That's just something that's uncomfortable for people. Right. Because, again, our value is always tied to what it is that we could produce. Right. Because if ever you say, I can't do that, or this is too much, or I can't do more, there's a thought process of, can they find somebody else that can?
Right.
And so I'm always pushing through that. So the first thing, we have to normalize the conversation of being overworked. And that just has to be something that people are willing to talk about. The other thing is to be able to say, what are the things that are important to humans, period, right? Community, breaking bread, being able to be vulnerable and open and those type of things. And then you need to evaluate your environment. You say, how much space is there for those things? How much space do we have for community? How much space do we have, you know, to engage each other and break bread and laugh and have time to, you know, to really be around each other as humans? The other piece of it is how am I acknowledged for my work? How do I create a connection to my work versus how it makes me feel? So, right, if we talk about the hierarchy of needs, right, the basic one is physiological, right? Do you have the food? Do you have water? Do you have those basic things? Now, we assume that people come to us with that. First of all, we don't know people's home lives, and sometimes people are hungry, and sometimes people are physically hurting, and we have to make sure that's square before that person can go anywhere. The second thing we have to do is we have to make sure people are safe. Do you feel safe where you are? Do you feel safe telling your feelings? Do you feel safe being vulnerable? Do you feel safe being open? The next three are almost all social and internal, right? There are, do you feel a sense of belonging, right? Do you feel like you should be here, your value here, people want you here? The next piece is, do you have a level of self-esteem? Do you feel good at your job? People do often what they do well. Do you feel like you do it well? If you feel like you do it well and you're confident, you'll want to do it. And then lastly is self-actualization. Why are you here? What's your purpose? You know, does this matter? You know, am I making widgets and what's-its? Or am I connecting people? Or am I helping people? Or am I solving a problem? Those components, those top three, are the ones that help people feel full and fulfilled. And that's the part that we have to work on the most.
Where do you begin? Because it does sound like a lot of work in some. It could be.
It is.
In some teams, it could be a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, usually because you're undoing things. Mm. And undoing things is a lot of work. So when somebody arrived to you after 20, 30, 40, 50 years of experience is usually negative in the workplace, not really tending to them as a human, you have to convince the person who wants it that they can have it. That it's even available to them, that it's even possible. That's usually what our first task is, to get them to believe again. But that's the scary part, because people are scared of hope. Because when you have hope, then we're waiting for the other shoe to drop. they're not really going to do it. This is not really going to stick. This won't really last. And then we go into that piece of it. So that's one of the first things that we have to do is just getting people to believe that they deserve it and that they should expect it. We ask people the question, how many of you deserve to be happy? All the hands go up. We say, how many of you expect to be happy? We lose 60% of the hands, right? Most people don't expect to be happy. But in life, if you don't expect your kids to get good grades or clean their room, will they? If you don't expect people to come in to work on time, will they? You're far less likely to get things that you don't expect.
Yeah. Sometimes they don't do those things when you do expect them.
Right. But they will not.
Right.
If you don't. And that's what we're really talking about. We're not talking about batting 1,000. We're talking about better than.
Yeah.
Right.
How does attitude play into burnout? How does your own attitude that you bring to work contribute to a culture?
Yeah, attitude is directly connected to your altitude, right? It's how you choose to come in. Now, a lot of times people naturally eye roll at that, right? Because that premise has been used for people to endure poor work conditions, right? It's just your attitude, right? And it takes all the onus off of leadership to provide things to make a way for you. That said, you're responsible for your own happiness. So it has to be about your attitude, right? Because when we talk about perception, right? For most person that's making $35,000, their perception is, hey, I don't make enough money. The reality of it is as it pertains to the world, you're one of the wealthiest people in the world, right? Something bad can happen that we see on the news. We say, man, what's going on in Sioux Falls? But to the world, we're one of the safest places in the world. And so it's a matter of perception. It's a matter of how you choose to see it. And it's deeper than just glass half full, glass half empty, because the reality of it is that our glass is mostly full. And you bump into people, you say, how are you doing today? And they say, not bad. Well, if it's not bad, then it's good. Right? Yeah. And so a lot of people don't see an absence of bad things as a good thing. So when you go through your day and nothing bad happened to you, that's a really, really good day.
Yeah.
That's a really good day.
We were having an agriculture conversation earlier, and one of our guests talked about the struggles in the ag industry right now, what people are going through. And then we talked about being under the authority of nature a little bit. You know, there's certain things you just cannot control.
Correct.
There was a lot of rain, and that's going to make a huge difference for people. That translates to everybody's work life, and there are things that we are under the authority of that we can't do much about. There are crises at work, mm-hmm. Computer systems break down, colleagues quit, and you have to sort of help, get the next person on board and spun up. How do you sort of approach those things that you can't control, and is there a way to minimize them so you have a little more mastery at work?
Right. Well, that's creating adaptability in your leadership, right? And saying that if we're always in a constant state of growth and development, meaning that for you as a human being, the only thing that we really found upon is if you stay still. That's not to say that you always have to move up.
Right.
That's not to say that you always have to be promoted, but are you growing as an individual? Are you better than you were yesterday? And are you trying to be? Right? That's what it really comes down to. Are we progressing? And so if that's happening, what happens is that the person becomes comfortable with the idea of flux. We're always pushing its change in every aspect of our lives. But the more healthy that becomes to us, the more adaptive we become. Because the more faith we have in each other, the more confidence you have in yourself, the more likely you are to address situations, no matter what the situation, with the same type of approach, which is I'm equipped, someone has my back, and I know how to manage this. And if you take it with that approach, anything can come at you and you'll deal with it because you have confidence in yourself and you have confidence in your community. And that is the important part of culture, is that it allows you to be able to say that there's not much that we can't accomplish, right? And having that attitude and really being able to live that allows you to approach any situation dynamically and not be fixed and not say, step one, step two, step three, we can't innovate, we can't pivot, we can't move, we can't change. A lot of times that environment that makes it so that people are not open to change is usually established by the business itself, meaning that you sit here, you do your job every day, same time, same thing, go to break at the same time, you're putting me in a space where there's no change until you want it, right? And then I naturally reject it.
Mm. How did you get on this path?
The thing about it is my partner and I, we were in various levels of leadership mostly in the financial industry, call centers a lot. And so we had a really high turnover rates. And what we just saw was, I was one of those people that people would just come to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they shared a lot of things to me, and they would come out of a meeting and they wouldn't say anything, and they would come to me and they would tell me all the things that they wanted to say, because they knew that I would say it. And they knew that I just was missing a thing in my mind that made me fearful of my leaders. I just saw people. I didn't see position or anything like that, because I knew when we stepped out of this office, you had to manage the same things that I had to manage. And we were just in different places in our journey. Mm. And there's a lot of people who led me that I could have had the position. I just didn't want it at that particular point in time. And I realized that once we normalized that piece of it and they were able to confide in me, I realized that so many leaders are scared. They don't know what's happening. They don't know what's going on. And then you realize there's not a whole lot of cohesive energy to say, this is our direction. This is where we're going. And I saw the effect that it was having on people. And one day I was looking across from my cube mate, and we had low cubes, so we were looking at each other. And I was just staring at him. He's like, well, dude, what are you looking at? And I was like, I shouldn't see you more than I see my wife. Mm-hmm. And he said, what? I said, do you think that you should see this mug more than you see your kids? And he was like, no, of course not. I was like, then shouldn't we ask for more? Like, shouldn't we get more? If I'm not going to be with my family, if I'm not going to be pursuing my passions, if I'm not going to be chasing down my dreams, I need more than a paycheck. And that's when it was just a matter of saying, this has to be different. And then my partner and I got together and we really started thinking about these solutions and start thinking about the things that we were doing as different as leaders. Mm-hmm. That were really working for us. And then we started nailing it all down. And what we really came to was we're designed to do most of these things, right? We just need the courage to be able to do it. We need some techniques and some skills to be able to do it. And we need the confidence to be able to do it.
There's something audacious about that in a really wonderful way.
Right. But in the way that the way that magic happens, the way that this country was built, the way that this world, where we went from people who were banging rocks together to looking at being on different planets. Yeah. It's that audaciousness. It's the audaciousness of what we can do versus what we're limited by is the difference between how we want to live. And do you want to live in a different way, or do you just want to survive your day?
Yeah. All right, how do people connect with you and the work that you're doing for folks who are listening and saying, you know, I want a little bit more of this conversation?
Yes, they can definitely check us out on letsthink3d.com, our other social media that you'll find us on under Think3D. And I just recently did a TEDx, and so people can check that out as well. I would love for people to go look for that, Low on Leaders. The TEDx on leadership. So that's a great start.
You are welcome back here anytime. It's always an insightful conversation. Fani Harari, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.